The only time he diets is for Big Fight Day. And that's why we love Ricky Hatton.
All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I've got a fantastic show for you today. Today's guest is the one and only Ricky Hatton. Yeah, he's been on my list of guests I really wanted to get hold of from day one. I'm a massive boxing fan, as a lot of you might know, and Ricky was a massive hero of mine, so it was really amazing to get to speak to Ricky. And for that, I've got to thank, here's a name drop, Tony McCarroll. I noticed a picture on Instagram with Tony up at Ricky's gym, and just messaged him and said, you know, do you know Ricky? Is there any way he would do the show? And Tony made a couple of calls, and then, yeah, and then a few days later, I was speaking to Ricky in the car as he was heading up to Middlesbrough to do a show. So yeah, really, really wonderful to speak to Ricky. Absolute dream come true for me. And thank you so much to Ricky for making it happen, and his manager Paul, and for Tony for setting it all up. So plaudits all round. So I really hope you guys enjoy that interview. It's a relatively short one. Ricky didn't have a ton of time. And so, yeah, so it's not too long. So for the rest of this episode, we are going to be doing an A to Z. This is the A to Z of Cast No Shadow, which is an absolutely fantastic song. We've got a couple of brilliant breakdowns. One of them is from Grandpa Batman, who you've heard of on here before, who tells a couple of very interesting stories about his connection to the song particularly. And also from Ryan Harvey at the Harvey Boys, who's, as we know, a very good friend of the podcast and has done some brilliant breakdowns. And this is no exception. It's absolutely fantastic. I've also, because this is a, it's the first track from What's the Story, Morning Glory that's come up. It's the first one where we have the SACD breakdown, so we can actually separate out and hear some individual tracks. So I'm going to be talking through some of those individual tracks just to give you a breakdown of how this track actually came about if you pick it to pieces, which should be really good. And just a quick reminder for the upcoming shows, Star-Shaped Oasis Night on the 2nd of August is just 2 weeks away now, so do make sure you've got your tickets for that. It's going to be an absolutely incredible night at the O2 Islington Academy. Myself and Magic Mod co-hosting, Alan McGee Q&A, Oasis tribute band playing, Phil Smith, Oasis tour DJ playing tunes, as well as the Star-Shaped DJs playing tunes. And I'm going to be doing, make sure you're there early, and do contact me if you're coming beforehand if you want to take part in the Oasis Trivia Showdown. We will be crowning the world's number one Oasis expert. And if you think that could be you, then get in touch. And yeah, and it's going to be a really, really fantastic event. Then beyond that, we have an evening with Alan McGee and myself at the Arlington Arts Centre near Newbury on September the 7th. We have an evening with Alan McGee back at the Water Rats on the 11th of October. And we are going to Glasgow, 1st of November, Oasis Podcast Live with Tony McCarroll. And the Oasis Tribute Band Columbia are going to be playing. And it's going to be an absolutely phenomenal, mad night. So do make sure, if you're anywhere near any of those venues, make sure you're getting your tickets. Because, yeah, I really want these to be absolutely brilliant nights. So yeah, any questions, do get in touch. And if you want me to come to a venue near you, let me know and we can make it happen. Anyway, news-wise, there's not much has happened really since we last podcasted. Liam and Noel both been on tour, playing a few gigs, done a little bit of press, but nothing too exciting. No major spats or anything. So what we will do, we'll just crack on with the interview with Ricky, and I'll see you on the other side for a bit of Cast No Shadow. Without a lover. Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, great, thanks.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you very much for doing the interview. Much appreciated,
yeah,
mate. No worries. And so you're just back from Vegas, yeah, with Tyson. How was that?
Yeah, really got back from Vegas on Tuesday night. So just about getting over the jet lag. got straight in the gym training my lads since I've got back. And just on our way to Middlesbrough, we've got a function there tonight. So keeping busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's mad that you're, having retired, you know, you're so busy, whether it's training fighters or whether it's these promotions and things. You booked Vegas Tales a couple of years ago, which was fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah.
You've got to keep busy, to be honest. I think when you retire, when you do something like boxing, that takes up pretty much every day of your working life. Because, I mean, you're in the gym, you're training, you're running for months and months. And then, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, when you retire and you've got all this time on your hands, if you don't feel your time on your hands, you know, you can hand yourself in trouble, which it did with me in the past. Then
too. Yeah.
But, yeah, keep it busy now, come out the other end, and life's really, really good. Keep it busy, got lots of good things going on.
Fantastic. No, that's great. Well, this is the Oasis podcast, and I read an interview with you where you said that your priorities in life is basically, number one, family, two, boxing, three, Man City, and then four, Oasis. So
yeah, to be honest with you, you know, it's meet my family, you know, first, and then my boxing. My family first, and then my boxing, because my boxing gave me family.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate to give them. But then, you know, I think Oasis and Man City come in very, very close third place. It wouldn't be fair to put them in a third or fourth, to be honest, because they both mean equally as much to me.
No, oh, that's brilliant. And do you remember when you first heard Oasis when you were a kid?
Yeah, just heard it, you know, just on the radio, like you do, you know. And then as time goes on, you get your CDs and you get more into it, and then, you know, as you get more into it and all the music, you get more into Noel and Liam's character and what they're all about. And the reason why it was good for me, because, I mean, they were council estate lads just like myself that had done really good at what they're good at. And no airs and graces, you know, say it how it is. Come from, you know, I made, you know, real successes of themselves. So, you know, there's a lot that I can relate to.
Absolutely.
Noel and Liam, and that's why I think we get on so well.
Well, I think that's definitely the case. And when you look at, you know, the mirror image, really, of each other, in that, you know, everyone talks now about there's no bands like Oasis anymore that have got that passion, and that people, they don't just want to listen to the music, but they want to walk like them and have the attitude and the swagger. And, you know, you definitely had that as well, Ricky, the passion.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for years, you know, I used to walk around with me son out on, you know what I mean? And I was nearly as famous for me son out as Noel and Liam were. But they're like the real people.
Yeah.
And, you know, what you see is what you get. And they're just, you know, and I think that's why people like me in the boxing, because there was nothing false about me. I think that they liked the way I used to fight. You know, I was very aggressive, used to get stuck in, I used to fight for me city and my family. And I think the way I was away from the boxing gym, it was no different to the man in the crowd and the person that supported me. So the fans who supported me could relate to me. And it was everything the same with Noel and Liam. You know what I mean? You know, we we always say what's on our mind. We just you can't kid the public.
Yeah.
And when there's so many things, whether it be in boxing or sport or you know, everything's so scripted and false these days. And you know, with all the reality shows that you go on, where it's all a forgive me for saying that.
Yeah.
It's all a bollocks.
Yeah.
I think Nolan Lee would probably say the same. It's just for us. It's about you see what you get.
Yeah.
Just put out what we did. And we're proud of our roots and where we come from. And, that's basically, isn't it?
No, that's brilliant. And they famously came with you to Vegas for the Paulie Malignaggi fight and carried the belts in. That was a great moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, here at the MGM Grand, referee Kenny Bayless calls a halt to the contest. The official time, 28 seconds, round number 11. The winner by TKO victory, still the IBO Ring Magazine light welterweight champion of the world, the fighting pride of Manchester, England, Ricky Hitman Hatton.
One of my best moments, one of the highlights of my career. I think it's clear to say I beat better people than Paulie Malignaggi, although he was a two-weight world champion. But the fact that the lads carried the belts in for me, you know, I've been mating for a number of years. I've always asked them, could they carry the belts in? And they never got round to doing it because they always had a gig on or something, or they couldn't make it. But this time they actually did get the chance to do it, and it was something else. And there's a picture I have in my games room where Liam have both got the belts there, and I've got a belt around my waist. Liam, in typical fashion, giving it the two fingers, and I stood there. And I think it's the best picture I have in my games room, because I think if there was ever a picture that personified Manchester, I don't think you get much. You know, working class Manchester, you know, success stories, if you like. I don't think you get much better than that. It was a real brilliant occasion.
Yeah, I remember reading that, like, when Liam held the belt up, you told him, like, well, what you need to do is basically have a wander around with it. And he's actually charged right up to Malignaggi's face and be like...
Yeah, he got rolled up in front of Malignaggi's face, and I didn't mean literally in his face, you know. he went right up to Malignaggi, got right in his face, and, you know, obviously, what do you bloody think about that? It was funny, but it was brilliant. After then, the following day we flew to Mexico City to watch them do their gig there. So it wasn't just the fight that was the occasion; it was the whole weekend. Do you know what I mean? We won the fight there, carried the belt in, great performance. Flew to Mexico City, went to watch them gig there, and we had a. They gave us a table actually on the stage where they were playing, and they got us loads of ice buckets with cans of Guinness in and cans of lager in.
Brilliant.
Me and my pals just sat there. We were only feet away from them. It was brilliant. Liam got me up, introduced me to the crowd. 40,000 Mexicans were there. It was a real special weekend that will stay with me forever.
And you've stayed mates with them as well, haven't you? I know you go to matches quite a bit with them and things like that.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always a shame them not being together now, that I have to, you know, go to the see them individually and sort of like see Noel at Noel's gigs or Liam at Liam's gigs or stuff like that. It is a shame how it turned out. But I mean, you know, you don't know what goes on with families. I mean, I fell out with my mum and dad for a number of years, you know, so and. and people say to me, you know, what did you fall out of? I say, none of your business. You know what I mean? Because it is, you know, it's one thing you don't want to stick your nose into is family affairs. You know, it's best just to leave them be to it. But I mean, I did finally sort it out after about my 8 or 9 years with me. And Dad, you know, and I'm hoping that given time, maybe Don and Liam will do the same. But if they don't, you know, as long as they're doing well and they're happy, and you know, that's good enough for me.
Well, Ricky, could you not get them both in the same room and just threaten to beat the crap out of them if they don't make it? Come on, mate.
I probably could do. I mean, that would probably be the best chance to get it. But I mean, it's like people used to say to me, and I, you know. You only have, you know, one mum and dad, and people used to, people would probably say to Liam and Noel, you only get one brother, but it's easy for people to say that when your life's going on all rosy, but you don't know what, you don't know the ins and outs of what actually happened. So I just always think it's the best. If I thought it was the right thing to do, was sit them down and give them both a slap and say, come on, get your asses in here, trust me, because we had so many great times, so many great memories. We still will have, you know, from them days. I just do, you know, friends with them both, and they're both happy and succeeding where the path brings them. And hopefully, you know, I think we all, as Oasis fans, hope that they patch up. And, you know, but if they do, they do. They don't, they don't. But if they do, it would be lovely. But, you know, it's family's family, and it's... It's always difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that the main thing is we'd love them to be friends again and brothers again. And then the music is a secondary thing, really.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But because I become friends with them, you know, with Noel and Liam, a lot of people, you know, because obviously, they've not known them from a personal perspective like I am, you know, I couldn't give two shits about the music now. And the music... will live forever. That's not a problem. but that's what it will do. The music will live forever. They'll, you know, we'll be playing these till the day I die. Them tunes. You know what I mean? And you know, the main thing is having known them from a personal point of view, that I hope they make up for them as brothers.
Yeah.
And the music. You know, I don't think I'd be. If they did that and made a comeback with the music, obviously happy days. But no. If it my priorities, if they to see him just. Yeah, Pally, or even get an even keel would be nice to see.
Is everyone having a good time? Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic to be here. I know, as far as I'm concerned, this is the greatest band the world's ever seen. Britain's most successful band, and I feel very proud to call them friends. As you know, the last time they were on the stage, there was a lot of people who jumped up. Anyone jumps up tonight, you'll have me to fucking deal with. But Liverpool, this is a fantastic crowd. I'd like to introduce you on stage now. The greatest band in the world, give it up for the Oasis!
And the Oasis music, was that a lot of when you're doing on those long runs, getting into shape for fights, was a lot of Oasis on the iPod or on the stereo?
Absolutely. You know, and all the Manchester bands, Oasis were obviously my favourite, but all the Manchester bands, Stone Roses, Happy Mondays, Oasis, you used to like the Smiths, but Oasis, you know, when I used to go to the changing room, warming up before my fight, I had nothing else on, Oasis, and I had it on full belt, and it was part of me getting psyched up for my fight. A lot of people want their changing room as a little bit of a morgue sometimes, so they can concentrate. But you know, I was always fully concentrated. But Oasis was my little fire in the belly to get me going and psyched up for my fights. And,
It didn't do bad at all, mate. And I noticed that I was watching some of the Tyson Fury training videos. I'm a massive boxing fan. And I noticed he was training to a bit of Morning Glory was blasting out. Is that your influence, or is Tyson a big Oasis fan?
Well, Tyson's a big Oasis fan as well. I wouldn't say he's a massive, massive Oasis fan. I think, like all Mancunians, he can't help but being an Oasis fan. But it's that type of music.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, with the beat to it, you know, just that just gets you going. And yeah. At the end of the day, what you see is what you get with Tyson Fury. You know what I mean? He's what you see is what you get. He's no airs and graces. Council lad, you know, he's become the heavyweight champion of the world. So obviously, you know, even though he is an Oasis fan, the respect is always going to be there for where they both come from. You know, just like I have the respect for him. Tyson will have the respect for him as well because they've come from the council state and made massive successes. You know, they're one of the greatest bands of all time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Ricky, well, I tell you what, I know you're a busy man, I'll let you go, but we always finish this with the song of the guest's choice. So is there a particular Oasis song that you want to end with, mate?
There's so many. I could just reel them off all day, couldn't I? I'd say Rock and Roll Star, yeah.
Rock and Roll Star, of course.
Yeah, I wasn't far behind them two myself.
Yeah, you lived it, mate. Wonderful. Yeah. Ricky, thank you so much for your time, mate. I really appreciate it.
Cheers, thanks, mate.
So there he was, former two-weight world boxing champion Ricky Hatton, great hero of mine, massive sporting icon and legend, and he's done the Oasis podcast. Wow, how cool is that? Right, let's do some Cast No Shadows, shall we? Let's start this off by going over to our good friend over the water, Grandpa Batman.
Hey everyone, this is Grandpa Batman from the Batforce Radio Podcast. Thank you, James, for having me back on the Oasis Podcast for the A to Z review discussion about the next song, which is Cast No Shadow, from the second album, What's a Story, Morning Glory. Cast No Shadow is one of my favorite songs from the album. I often think that it's a little underappreciated. It's almost like, because it's the second acoustic song on the album, it's like the baby brother to Wonderwall. I know that it was written and recorded as one of the final pieces of the album. There had been an argument where Noel left the band, and they didn't know if the album was going to be finished or if the band was done, what. And it took about 3 or 4 weeks for him to cool down, Liam to, apologize to the rest of the band. This is all documented in Paulo Hewitt's book called Getting Hot, The Adventures of Oasis, which, if you haven't read it, is a must-read for all fans of the band. It talks about, you know, the recording of the album a little bit in there. And this song also was dedicated to the Verve singer and lyricist Richard Ashcroft, which appears that, you know, he and Noel were better friends than what they are today back during 1995, especially coming off the release of their album A Northern Soul, which was produced by Owen Morris as well. Also in the book, it describes the writing process of the song. Noel had written the music on his acoustic guitar while traveling back up to Rockfield Studios. This is an excerpt from the book. "It was the only time I've seen Noel and Liam stood together in the studio," Owen Morris recalls. "Noel was still writing the words as Liam was singing it, and they were both stood there really close to each other. Liam would sing, and then Noel would say, "Hang on," and change the words and say, "Okay, sing this." It was beautiful, and Liam's vocal on that song is amazing. Liam is fantastic vocally, and he's got a real soul to him. And he's exactly right. I mean, this is a great performance by Liam Gallagher on this track. This is Liam in his prime. And even though this song is not that much of a dynamic stretch, and there's not a lot, you know, of higher notes to get, you know, into his range, it's more about his inflection and the delivery of the syllables that really, you know, stands out as a special track. Plus, you've got Noel, his harmonies and the falsettos that add so much texture and fills in the spaces between the main vocals and the music, especially the high soaring ah and pride parts at the end of the vocals in the chorus. I love those parts, and that really lifts the song with the slide guitar that accompanies that. I mean, that's excellent production and songwriting right there. As far as the music, it's a very simple song to play on acoustic guitar. Has a very simple arrangement. The lyrics are very, you know, repetitive, so that it's the same verse with the same pre-chorus and the same chorus, which is a little bit of a pattern that Noel got into with the What's the Story, Morning Glory. Part of me thinks that maybe it was due to time constraints, especially since they had, you know, an interruption for about a month there in the middle. But a part of me also thinks that he was writing to the strengths of the band and maybe Liam as a vocalist. He knew how to write for Liam, knew how Liam would sing and enunciate certain words, especially, you know, words that ended in I or A. Maybe he was just lazy, or maybe he was just following the old rock and roll cliche of keep it simple, stupid, where, you know, what better way to ingrain your songs into the minds of a listener than to just repeat the same lyrics over and over? You know, you hear it in modern pop music today where you have a little bit of verse and then a chorus, you know, over and over and over. So enough about that. Let's get into the actual music, how to play this song on guitar. Once again, it's a very simple guitar. He's using basically the same chord structure that he did during Wonderwall. So for the guitarist out there, you know, the opening chord is an A suspended fourth, where you've got that third finger planted on the B string at the third fret, and your first two fingers on the E and A. So, and then second chord is just a G. So your verse is just A and G. The pre-chorus is the same E minor shape that Wonderwall has. You got your E minor with your third finger still on that D. D, C9, and G. So play that sequence three times. On the fourth time, it'll be E minor, D, and ring out the C9. So it goes E minor, D, C9. And this is where the songwriting and the chorus has a lift, because it goes from that C9 up to the G. Back to your original A suspended 4, A sus 4, resolves on the C. The two trailing chords after that are just the E minor and a D. So here's your chorus. Thank you. chord sequence is pretty typical and pretty common in a Noel Gallagher written song, because he follows a chromatic pattern. He takes us up, he starts with the G, goes up to the A, C, so we go up, and then he resolves it by coming back down, hitting the E, so G, A, C, and just repeats. Now, one thing I need to point out about this song is the bass. Gwigsy is credited as playing bass on the album, but most suspect that it's actually Noel playing the bass after either Gwigsy recorded his parts or just did the bass, because the bass has got some very interesting runs and plays some licks in there that you can definitely tell it's someone that is accustomed to playing lead guitar. The bass, especially during the chorus parts, has got a couple of cool little runs that if you listen to, pay close attention to, it's a really impressive song from a bass guitar point. It doesn't just stick with the root and follow what the acoustic guitar does. Another added element on this song is the slide guitar. That is an element that Noel really doesn't play slide live much, unless it's like, at the very end of a song and he's making noise and just kind of ends the song. But there are some really cool slide guitar parts in this song, especially if you want to add some delay and reverb to get that tone. Another part of the production is Owen Morris bringing in the orchestral arrangement, which I believe on an earlier podcast and interview, he just mentioned that, that was something actually using MIDI software instead of actual orchestral players. You basically playing it with a keyboard designated with orchestral tones. But that was an element that he brought with this album that they didn't do in Definitely Maybe. If you listen to the previous album that he did with the Verve, Northern Soul, especially on a song like On Your Own, there is that orchestral arrangement on there. Probably the biggest difference on this album than Definitely Maybe was the addition of Alan White on drums. Completely different player than Tony McCarroll. And this song is a real highlight for him, for Alan White, because, his background and his teaching, he had a totally different style and vibe, and more of, the backbeat slapstick type of stuff. He's using, hot rod sticks versus your traditional, drumsticks, to get that little rat-a-tat-tat type of beat, especially in, you hear all the ghost notes played on the snare, because, he's just not hitting the snare with his left hand. He's hitting the snare and letting it kind of bounce a little bit on the head to kind of give it that pop, 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 pop. That's a technique that, some drummers use to help them keep their own timing. But then, throughout the song, his fills where he'll, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Amazing. I'll be honest, What's the Story Morning Glory was the first album that I heard of Oasis. I didn't even know that they had released Definitely Maybe. It's just where I grew up. They didn't play a lot of UK music in the local radio stations where I grew up. And so, of course, as most Americans, were introduced to Oasis by Wonderwall. And then after listening to this album, you learn, oh, there's a previous album. Let me go back and listen to that. So, you know, the two albums were totally different from each other. And a large part of it is, you know, due to the drumming that's on this album, you know, with Alan White, you know, especially in songs like Wonderwall, Cast No Shadow, Champagne Supernova. Each drummer was perfect for the album that they played on. Their roles, you know, they truly brought out the best performances for the songs that they recorded on. I love Tony McCarroll. I thought he did an awesome job. I think he's a legend. But I also think that Alan White was perfect for these songs at that time, and what he brought to them really lifted them to what Noel's vision was for the sound and future sound of the band. Getting into the lyrics, I think the lyrics for Cast No Shadow are some of the most poetic and definitely the most mature lyrics that he had written up until this point. You know, a lot of people slag him off as not being much of a lyricist, but you know, this song clearly shows that when he really focuses and is inspired by something, he can really write some deep, personal, and profound lyrics. Maybe it was, you know, his inspiration for dedicating it to Richard Ashcroft. Maybe he had been listening to A Northern Soul and kind of wanted to convey some of the imagery that Ashcroft had used in some of his songs. Who knows? Maybe it was, you know, just the magic that happened being in the studio. That happens sometimes where, you know, you get in a moment and you find yourself doing something in a studio that you had no idea or, you know, no premeditation about. It's just instinctual and you go with it. And that's the beauty of, you know, sometimes writing in a studio. You know, when I first heard this song, I really wondered, what does he mean, cast no shadow? I was fascinated by this song. This song, it's funny because when I was in college, I wanted to start a band. I had been playing acoustic guitar for, you know, 2 or 3 years, and I was all into the 90s grunge bands, but you really can't play them on acoustic guitar. So that was one of the first things that drew my attention to Oasis. Here were some songs that I could actually learn and play. And, you know, so I go to college and I meet some guys and I want to start a band. These two guys, both of them were like vocalists, and they're really good vocalists and they're really good at harmonizing. And one guy kind of played guitar, and I played guitar, so we started, you know, performing. And, you know, as most young bands do, you don't really have your own material, so you just play what you know. And some of the guys were deeply, you know, faith-based, you know, had a strong Christian conviction, and you know, they didn't want to do any of the like grunge songs that I love. So we would find you know, songs by, like, there was a Christian alternative band called Jars of Clay. We would play Jars of Clay to death, and I brought in Cast No Shadow, and I kind of tricked one of the vocalists into saying, yeah, this is a faith-based song, because, you know, the lyrics say, you know, as he faced the sun, he cast no shadow. Like, this man's sins have all been forgiven, and he's been redeemed, and it worked. And so we used this song to enter the university talent show. We called ourselves Dyslexic Dog, and played Cast No Shadow for the university talent show and did pretty well. listening to your previous interview with Colin Hassard about Noel's lyrics and religion brought back that memory. So thanks, Colin, for helping me relive some college glory days. As far as the live performance of the song, I always liked how Liam and Noel both changed the lyrics on the chorus. Liam, like during the Main Road performance, changed the chorus to "You can take my soul, don't take my pride." And I love that line. That's so cool. And then during the MTV Unplugged appearance, Noel changed the perspective on the second verse and started using the word "I." And then also during the chorus. And I really wish they had done that in the studio recording, because it adds such a interesting dynamic and an interesting perspective to the song. Plus, it's just not the same lyrics, you know, again and again. Well, I think this wraps up all my thoughts on Cast No Shadow. It is one of my favorite songs from the What's the Story Morning Glory album. So thanks again, James, for having me on the Oasis podcast. I know this was pretty long. It's just a song that's dear to me. I also want to thank all the other people who contribute and add their stories. It makes a difference. We are listening to you, and I love hearing people all over the world talk about their relation and their stories behind this band that has brought us all together. You know, James is directing this podcast, but it really is a podcast of the people, just like the music of Oasis is.
That was fantastic. Thank you very much to Grandpa Batman. And yes, if you are interested in Batman related stuff, comics, and particularly the DC Bat family sort of side of it, then do check out Bat Force Radio podcast. Right, now let's go over to our good friend Ryan Harvey, who's done a breakdown, much more looking at the history of how the song was played live as well. So this is really good. And I feel bad because Grandpa Batman's got that theme tune. So I've got to give Ryan Harvey, who is at the Harvey Boys, his own theme tune as well.
This is Ryan Harvey at the Harvey Boys. Oasis A to Z, Cast No Shadow. So let's go through some live versions.
Bound with all the weight of all the words he tried to say.
Yeah, man, I can't do this with all this nonsense coming out of his fucking speakers. Sorry about it, can't get the staff, can you?
Here's a thought for every man who tries to understand what was in his hands. What's in his hands.
So that's from Earl's Court. Noel did an acoustic set on that, which you can see Morning Glory on the There and Then video. It's taken from that little acoustic set. They didn't have the full production there. There is an earlier New York 95 video of Noel doing quite slow and acoustic. He's just sort of hammering on the strings a little more, a little bit different. We move on to 96. So in April we have the famous Main Road gigs, and Liam and Noel doing the song as intended. Bonehead on the piano, got the string section. That same is played at Nebworth in that same way. So in 96 we get those sort of iconic versions. Interesting part on that one that I mentioned, I actually watched the full main road gig, so the full second night gig. So the first and second night gigs are on YouTube instead of the There and Then version, which mixes main road second night with Earl's Court 95, depending on the song. The famous sort of spat argument with Noel and Liam, or one of the most top five famous ones, is where they mess up Whatever in Main Road, since it'll be several years till we get to Whatever on this A to Z, so quickly go through that. So Liam comes in too early with the singing. There's always argument on, if you look at the comments whenever anyone posts this, there's always argument about who did what wrong, etc. But to me, Liam comes in too early, or initially there should be the guitar intro. The crowd starts singing already, which kind of maybe confuses Liam. Liam comes in the second set of chords, where and Noel starts shaking his head at him. Noel has to call it to a stop. And the one bit that tells me is, you can hear Noel say in his very northern accent, well, they're going to go wrong, aren't they? They're going to go wrong, aren't they? Referring to the string sections, because Liam's come in too early, so the strings are four bars behind, or eight bars, or what, yeah, I don't know. So that when they hit the bridge, the string section is still going to be on the verse, I guess. So he had to stop it. Noel obviously assumed that the string section couldn't necessarily ad lib. I'm sure they could have done, but he obviously panicked, always a bit pissed off. So then Liam famously immediately sits down, has a can of Red Stripe, starts smoking while forcing Noel to do the song. Noel initially struggles with the singing and sort of gets into it towards the end. Famous shots of Liam there where he's just sat chilling out, smoking, crowd roaring when his face is put on the big screen. Say whatever I... So my overall point was, the incredible thing was that you have that argument, they fall out on stage, but then immediately pick up and they play Cast No Shadow, this incredible version that's on the There and Then DVD, just following that. So just sums them up, I think, beautifully, that example. Following Nebeth, we had the MTV Unplugged, where Cast No Shadow was planned. I'm guessing it was planned for Liam and Noel, but as you know, Liam famously had a sore throat again and watched from the stands, so Noel performs this on his own. They have the strings, so I was expecting it was going to be the same as the kind of big stadium Nebeth gigs they'd played as a setup, but again, it just ends up being Noel, with a real pianist this time, so not a bonehead hammering the chords, but she's doing sort of twiddly piano, so that's the sort of main difference on this version. I think generally after 96, it wasn't played. Noel did these solo acoustic gigs in 2006, where he kind of did a few gigs around the world with Gem and Terry, the drummer, so as a three-piece. They played Cast No Shadow there, so I think they went Paris, Australia, and London Union Chapel, which I actually went to the week before I got married, which was a bit of a hassle to get approval for, but I went with my wife to that gig on the Sunday before our wedding weekend, finishing with Married with Children, which was quite appropriate, I thought. So the difference there on that version is Gem's playing the strings on like a keyboard. It's kind of slower, so he's not doing the frantic strumming that he was doing in 96. So he's I think he's more style now with a slower kind of strumming pace, so give a bit more feeling to it in his old age, maybe. Similarly, like he does with Don't Look Back in Anger and things like that. Mm-hmm. So after that, I think the only live I could find is actually the V Festival 2009. So not Oasis, but the V Festival that pulled out of Liam's voice, allegedly, at the time, in the final days, week of the band. Actually, Tom from Keen was at the V Festival performing. Keen are a slightly guilty pleasure of mine, just don't tell anyone. First couple of albums, at least. He played Cast No Shadow for the absent Oasis and got the crowd to have their moment, as did Snow Patrol with a Champagne Supernova, I think, which was ropey at best, but obviously giving the crowd a chance to have their Oasis sing-along moment.
A song in honour of some absent friends.
And after that, I think we're up to Liam this year performing, and with the crowd filling in Noel's pride high parts and maybe the harmonies as well. Liam was not in a seemingly a good mood in this gig, so maybe not as good as it could have been.
Here's a thought for every man who tries to understand what's in his hands.
What's in his hands?
He walks along the...
At least one more Noel version on a bootleg, Diamonds in the Sky, which again just straight Noel with an acoustic. Not sure when that's from, but I think nothing beats that 96 Liam and Noel with the strings and Main Road and Nebworth as well.
So as tradition has it, let's quickly do the guitar chord breakdown and try and keep it quick. So super beginner song here from Noel again, so similar to Whatever, Wonderwall. You keep your third and fourth finger rooted in the same spot, third fret on the highest two strings. So if you do a G, full G with all four fingers, and then you're basically moving your first and second fingers around to do all the different chords, A, E minor, C, D. So you can certainly see that on the Earl's Court live video, is that this is exactly how he plays it. So it's great. So verse A7 sus 4. So we've got a funky A chord with the two fingers, the root of two fingers giving us the fourth and the seventh to give us this suspension. So it's that and then to the G. So that's the intros and the verse. I guess the bridge, bow with all the weight, so that's four chords. E minor, D, C, G. So again, keeping third and fourth finger exactly where they are.
Chained to wild places I never wish to stay. As he faces sun, he casts no shadow.
So just a single strums on that, E minor, D, C. Then the chorus is just a different combination of the same chords. So we got G, A, C, E minor, D. So.
As it took its soulless story's
G, A, C, E minor, D. Then back.
As he faces sunny cast.
And the only other different bit is when you've done that bit, he keeps his hand on the C, add 9, just lifts his first and second fingers off to give that transition. So,
as he faces sun, he casts no shadow.
Back to the... Two more fine detail notes at the end, where it's... He's just moving the C to have a B bass. When you go down to the bow with all the weight part, when you're on the G.
How
walk down your B note. So that was the only way to walk. What's he trying to say? So just two detail notes there for the guitarist. Really super for a beginner to learn in terms of finger position. It's all about getting Noel's strumming pattern and being able to play at speed like that to get it to sound right. So obviously I naturally gravitate towards the live versions. The recorded version is the kind of slower strumming, so this is something like again, lifting off is the first two fingers. It's sort of like what he was doing on the early live version with the, but not quite. And then of course we have the slide guitar going. Which again is an early, definitely maybe Morning Glory B-side kind of thing. The songs which have the slide acoustic guitar, not something we heard much of after that period, so all good. So on the recorded version, obviously absolutely love it. I really think the noticeable thing about Morning Glory is the change of drummer to Alan White, and you get his sort of military rat-a-tat drumming, as I've mentioned a few times, makes such a huge difference to these songs. Who knows what they would have sounded like with Tony McCarroll. Different, I'm sure, but would Morning Glory have been such a shift and so successful without this change to Alan White? Probably not. You've got this drumming. Don't Look Back in Anger has the famous fill, but also that Alan White's particular drumming style. Cast No Shadow has the same, like a military drumming, and Champagne Supernova, as we know, is similar, and especially in the live version, especially when they go to the crazy outro in the live, it almost goes like a military anthem at the end with the solos. So that, again, makes huge impact on this song. For me, not something you necessarily think about, but it's got that lovely sort of drumming in it. That's it from me. Follow me at the Harvey Boys. Till next time, JC.
Epic indeed. Thank you very much, Ryan. Much appreciated. That was brilliant. Yeah, some great points there. It is really interesting how that song has changed over time. And one of the things we want to do now is just to dig into the different parts. So, as I said, one of the things they released a few years ago was the SACD, the Super Audio CD of What's the Story, Morning Glory. Now, this is kind of, it was a format that was kind of like surround sound on DVD, but for audio CD. And they did quite a few this way. They did some like Pink Floyd and big things like that. The only Oasis album that was ever released in this format was What's the Story, Morning Glory. So basically what you can do is separate it out into six tracks. You know, like in stereo, you've got two tracks. You've got sort of the left channel and the right channel. And so something like the Beatles, some of the Beatles stereo stuff, the vocals are in one channel and the music's in the other channel. So you can just sort of mute one or the other speaker, basically, and hear the isolated vocal or the isolated instrumental, which is really cool. So with Oasis now, the only tracks that really we can do that on are the ones that have been given to Rock Band or Guitar Hero. And there's a few other bits and pieces here and there. But anyway, yes, so these the What's the Story, Morning Glory tracks, we can break them down a little bit. So what I just wanted to do is just break them down and go through some of the individual tracks so you can hear how this song's been made up. This has appeared on YouTube a few times, but everyone always just focuses on Wonderwall. You know, come on. Like, there's like 100... plus other Oasis songs that are worthy of breaking down like this. I'd love to be able to break every Oasis song down like this, but unfortunately it's just only available on certain songs. But anyway, this is what we've got. So first off, let's have a bit of the isolated main acoustic guitar that drives the song. Lovely stuff. Right, now this next track features strings, although it's not real strings, we know it's kind of keyboard strings, and also the sort of acoustic slide guitar that Noel peppers throughout the track. How cool was that? Isn't that amazing? Yeah, I love that. I just love how you can hear the fake keyboardness in the strings, the way they swoon around. They're just completely unnatural, like a true string section couldn't do that. Yeah, right. Let's have some bass. Now, this is one of my favourite Oasis bass lines. Whether or not Gwigsy did it, obviously did it live quite a bit, or whether it's Noel in the studio, I don't think we'll ever know, but I love this bass line. Great bass line. I mean, there's so much more of that. I'd love to just be able to play the whole thing, and I do suggest you dig out these tracks and just give the whole thing a listen, because it's really worth listening to. And yeah, there's so much more going on than the typical Oasis bass line. So yeah, it's a really, really good one. And why Noel like didn't continue to sort of put in or write these more complex bass lines, I don't really know. I mean, as soon as you get Andy Bell involved in the later years, then yes, the bass lines are a lot more complex, and also actually in the Standing on the Shoulders period as well, when Noel's playing the bass, definitely they are quite complex in that point, and they start to rise up in the mix a lot more, so you can actually hear them. Right, anyway, one more. Let's go into, now this is the sort of electric guitar that he's playing, and there's also mixed in a bit of the strings as well, and check out what happens on the strings here. This is amazing. Weird, did that sound, the strings, did you hear that? You couldn't hardly hear it on the record. It's just such a strange thing to do on the strings. Like I said, it's completely unnatural. It really demonstrates that it's not actual strings. And I'm sure a guitarist will can come in and correct me maybe, but it sounds like tremolo. Whether that's a whammy bar or however that's been done on that just strummed electric guitar on clean, just strumming the chords with a bit of tremolo. So yeah, it's just interesting to me, all these different aspects that they add to the tune that create this this fantastic song that is Cast No Shadow. Okay, so let's cover off the final things that we always do when we look at these A to Zs. So, yes, Cast No Shadow was an album track on What's Story Morning Glory. Was it right to be an album track? I think it was. I don't think it would have worked as a single necessarily. I think we had Don't Look Back in Anger and Wonderwall as a sort of more ballady, anthemic kind of songs, as singles from the album. So, yeah, I think it was right to be a just an album track. I don't think it should have been a B-side. I think if it was a B-side, it would be really up there with one of those absolutely legendary B-sides. You'd just say, I can't believe that was a B-side. So, yeah, definitely, I think on the album is exactly where it should be. And where it falls on the album as well, after Some Might Say, and just before She's Electric on side two, I think is absolutely perfect. I think as you come into side two, you've got sort of Some Might Say, that big slab of rock, and then you've got Cast No Shadow coming, just having a bit more of a blissed out moment, and then it takes back up again with a humorous kind of She's Electric fun, and then Morning Glory, and then Champagne Supernova to end. So I think that's absolutely perfect sequence, middle of side two. I think that's spot on. Lyrically, here's a thought for every man who tries to understand what's in his hands. He walks along the open road of love and life, surviving if he can. So he's being universal again here. We know at the time that he was trying to be universal. Like, some might say that sunshine follows thunder. You know, he was, and the master plan has got, you know, much more these big universal themes and ideas that Noel was trying to go with at the time. I suppose maybe buoyed on the fact that they'd had so much success. So he was really trying to lift things up and sort of write big, huge, special songs. And it's about, you know, who tries to understand what's in his hands. You know, it's not, he's not got a Rubik's Cube. You know, it's a metaphor for, like, you know, understanding what your life is all about and what you're trying to do with life. And then this is the real special stuff in the chorus. Bound with all the weight of all the words he tried to say. Same again. I've mentioned this a few times on here, but it's all about that Oasis thing, that Noel Gallagher thing of not being able to explain what you want to say. It comes up again and again. Wonderwall, Don't Go Away, all through the Oasis back catalogue. There's plenty of examples of, you know, explaining, not being able to explain what you want to say. This is slightly different even as well, because this is bound with the weight of the words he tried to say. So if you think of, like, when you wanted to say that thing to that person, maybe it was a breakup or maybe with a parent or something like that, and you didn't get a chance to say the thing and then you had to walk away. And then it's that guilt, or it's that, you know, it's on your shoulders, bound with all the weight of all the words he tried to say. That's that. I think that's absolutely brilliant. Chained to all the places that he never wished to stay. Once again, I think that's genius. You know, you grow up in a place, you want to get away from that place, but actually that place is always with you. I think that works with Noel in Manchester as well. He didn't want to stay in Manchester. He was desperate to get away, but he understands that Manchester is a part of him. Chained, so you're still chained to that place, whether it's family or upbringing, whatever it is, you're still chained to that place, and no matter how much you want to get away from it, that will always be a major part of you. As he faced the sun, he cast no shadow. This is interesting, cast no shadow. So, I mean, you could say, because it's sort of potentially about Richard Ashcroft, that because he was so skinny, he cast no shadow because he was just, there was nothing to him. Or I think because he was like a shell of a person, he was like almost a shadow himself, because there was just there was nothing about him. So whether it is talking about Richard or whether it's talking about someone else, as a human being, there's not enough there of a personality to actually cast a shadow. He's like a ghost, or he's like in that Woody Allen film where people are like faded. He's just not really there enough to even cast a shadow. So as they took his soul, they stole his pride. Well, this, I think, is the real key to the thing. Well, who is the they? Who are they to take his soul and steal his pride? Well, let's go back to some facts about this song. So Noel wrote the song apparently about Richard Ashcroft. In an interview with Select magazine, he said, "He always seemed to me to not be very happy about what was going on around him, almost trying too hard. That's why it goes, he was bound with all the weight of all the words he tried to say. I always felt he was born at the wrong place and in the wrong place, and he was always trying to say the right things, but they came out wrong. I played him the song and he nearly started crying. I was like, come on, hold yourself together, son, easy now. In a way, it's about all my friends who were in groups. We are bound with the weight of all the words we have to say. We're always looking for more. And then Ashcroft said, I think Brian Cannon, who does the sleeve, told me about it. I think it's one of the best tunes that Noel's ever written. It's a great honour to be part of that. And then when the album exploded like that, it's great. I was just really buzzing. I think it was almost an afterthought for Noel, but there were so many gags at the time because I was so thin. Is it because he's so thin that he casts in shadow? Is that what it's about? I did say to him, am I a vampire? What are you trying to say? And yeah, it, once again, so that sort of is that whole thing of, well, was he actually a vampire or is it just that he was so thin? But yeah, I think it's definitely along those lines. And there's also talk that, you know, the fact that Ashcroft apparently got committed to a mental institute for 5 months. So that was him being stripped of his soul and pride. Being taken and locked up. Or another reading of it is that they relates to the drugs. You know, the hard drugs take your soul and take your pride. So, yeah. Anyway, so I think that that's all very interesting. I'd like to hear your guys' interpretation, or if I completely missed something, I'd appreciate it. Get in touch as ever. oasispod@gmail.com is the place. And what I really enjoy is audio messages, exactly like you've heard from Grandpa Batman and Ryan Harvey. You could be featured on the Oasis podcast. Just ping in those audio messages over to me. Right, I think that will do it for today. So thank you for listening to the Oasis podcast. And as always, a special thanks to go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it's greatly appreciated. You can become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod, which is where I post articles. I post the episodes early and exclusive episodes sometimes. Please follow on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast. Email me oasispod@gmail.com and please subscribe and review on iTunes. And just a reminder of those upcoming live dates. 2nd of August, that's now less than 2 weeks away. It is Starshaped, where I'll be doing the Oasis Trivia Showdown quiz and loads of other great stuff happening that day. And then we've got September the 7th, Arlington Arts near Newbury, myself and Alan McGee. We've got October the 11th, Water Rats, myself and Alan McGee. And then we've got November the 1st, really big one, Glasgow Stereo. And that is with Tony McCarroll and Columbia, the Oasis tribute band. So make sure you're getting your tickets for all those places. Let's get these sold out. And then we'll keep doing them as long as you guys keep coming to them. All right, as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged and stay young.